My name is Julie Pearson Little Thunder. Today is Tuesday, October 23rd, 2012, and I'm interviewing Crystal Hanna as part of the Oklahoma Native Artist Project, sponsored by the Oklahoma Oral History Research Program at Oklahoma State University. We're at Crystal's home right now, just right between Sepulpa and Tulsa. Crystal, you're a Cherokee potter who apprenticed with Anna Mitchell, and you've gone on to win awards at all the major art shows. One trademark of your work is its elaborate graphic quality. And you're now exploring some ceramic dolls with your daughter. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me.
You're welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in Claremore Indian Hospital. And we actually lived in Tulsa most of our growing up years. But we spent a lot of time in Salina, where my mother's folks were from. So all my full-blood relatives were there, and we swam in the creek and ate crawdads and did all that good Indian stuff.
What did your folks do for a living?
Before my brother and sister were born, when I was six, my sister was born. But before that, my dad was a fisherman. And he literally fished the creek banks and rivers and lakes in Oklahoma for catfish. And that's how he made a living for me and my mom. We caught catfish, he cleaned them and went to the parks or went to little towns and sold his catfish. And he called himself Nature Boy.
Did you help a lot at all with that?
I don't know that I helped a lot, but I can tell you that it was a childhood experience that most kids would never have an opportunity to have, and I wouldn't trade it for the world, because we really didn't even live in a home until I was six. I mean, we lived on the creek banks, we had tents. I remember one time we had a bus, and Mom cooked out on an open campfire, and it was just incredible. I didn't know it at the time, but it really was. But then when I turned six and my sister was born, he had to like settle down. We had to move into a house. And so his dad had been a roofing contractor, hot tar roofing, and that's what he knew. And so he started his own business when I was six, and that's what he did until he passed away in the mid-80s.
How about your mom?
Mom was full-blood Cherokee. She never worked outside the home. She spent her time raising us kids. She did a pretty good job, for the most part, anyway.
So were they speaking? Were you speaking Cherokee growing up?
When I was young, before my sister was born, because we spent so much time at my grandmother's house in Salina, and that's all they spoke was Cherokee in the home. So yeah, I was picking it up and I learned it, but because Cherokee was my mother's first language, and it was really hard for her when she started first grade. She said the kids made fun of her, and so she said, no, you know, they would teach us little words, but for the most part, she says, my kids are going to speak English because they're not going to go through what I did. So I was caught in that generation where it just wasn't the thing that my mother thought we should do. But now we know better, you know. And if she were here now, I know she'd want me to be learning Cherokee, which we do a little bit, you know, on our own. So as much as we can, you know.
How about your relationship with your grandparents on either side?
On my mother's side, because we spent so much time with my grandma and my grandpa, Chuck Luck. My grandfather was Bridge Chuck Luck, and my grandmother was Annie Chuck Luck. And actually, my grandmother was a translator. I'm not sure exactly when, but probably before I was born, because my mom was the oldest of six living kids. But I know that there was a time that she was a translator in Salina. And I don't really know for what organization, but she did work as a translator at some point in time. And my grandpa, he was just always there.
What was your earliest memory of seeing art?
earliest memory? Well, probably when I saw my own dad. He liked to draw, just things that he saw. He liked to draw horses and things like that. So we always doodled, but you know, as far as like going to art shows or going to museums, I really wasn't raised like that. My mom wasn't raised like that, and so it was art to us was what we saw in nature and what we loved, what we saw. You know, that was our art.
So yeah, I'm wondering if it was easy for you to come by pencils and paper, given that.
Yeah, because I went to a public school, which on the east side of Tulsa, Mingo School. I went there from first grade through eighth grade, and it was actually a pretty wealthy public school because it was right there by McDonnell Douglas and American Airlines, and so we had a lot of opportunity there. Maybe. That I might not have had in some other school district, but yeah, we always had everything. We had art, you know. I did take art classes, you know. I think you could start in fifth grade, so that was kind of fun.
Did you have any other family members who were interested in art, or extended family?
No, none.
So, what is your earliest memory of making art or doing art?
I'm sure, you know, as a child, we made our mud pies and we decorated them and but nothing, you know, like formal. We never had any art contests or anything like that. Even in boarding school, we weren't exposed to any art or any of the traditional arts, you know, like beadwork. We didn't really get any of that. So now I think they are going a little more toward teaching the kids, even at a younger age, you know, more of the of what's artistic and what isn't.
Do you think, how would you describe the background that you got in primary school? Were you interested? Was the experience with art?
Not really, because to me it was all about sports and athletic and basketball, and so yeah, I took art, you know, for a couple of semesters in grade school, but for the most part, not any through high school, or you know, like a little bit of college that I had. No art.
And you went to college where?
Went to Northeastern. Back then it was Northeastern State College, so went there a year in the summer, and my husband was graduating, got married, and started having a family.
So you were raising the kids. Were you working part-time when they were young too?
Or? Worked full-time from the very beginning, took a little bit of time with both of my children when they were born, but for the most part, I've worked full-time for 40 years. A long time.
And you're also out in the country from the beginning, or?
Oh yeah, we've always lived out, so.
So you're taking care of, you're raising horses and.
Yeah, I don't think I could live in town for sure.
Well, what about the first time that you saw Indian art, Native art?
Really, the first time I was interested, or thought I might be interested, was in 1998. As I mentioned to you earlier, I was sitting at our bank waiting to speak to a loan officer so I could probably borrow some money for my husband's horse or something, but... And there was a brochure, it was about Red Earth, and Anna Mitchell had been named the honored one for Red Earth that year, and I read the article, and she just so intrigued me. She really reminded me of my mother. She was full-blood Cherokee. Her look even reminded me a little bit of Mom, and that's when I called Red Earth, and I said, I'm not sure why, I've never done this before, but I really would just like to meet this lady. She just sounds so incredible. And so that's when they said, well, we really can't give you her number, but we'll call her, and if she wants to, then she can call you. And she did. She called me the next day, and I was at work, and I was just like, oh, my gosh, this lady has called me, and she said I can come to her house and visit, and I did. The very next weekend, I took my husband's aunt, went up there, and we went Sunday after she got out of church. We visited all day, and she showed me her pottery, how she did it. And she said, you know, Crystal, I think that you might make a good apprentice. And then I kind of looked at her and I go, really? And then I thought about it in a moment and I really got chill bumps. You know, it's like, and I think I'm supposed to be doing this. And I've never really felt that way about anything, but I was at an age, you know, my kids were grown, like both my kids were out of college, and I was like, okay, now I'm looking for something to do. And she said, well, this was in October when I met her of 1998. She said, well, I'd start working on my pottery about the 1st of March. She says, I'll call you and you can come up. She says, now you can do an apprenticeship. She says, but I have to tell you now, I charge $500 for this. She says, but you can pay me out however you want. It doesn't make me any difference. She says, because I can see that you're really hungry to learn more about this. She says, but before you start making any pottery with me, here is a list of books. I want you to go to the library, look on the internet, buy books, whatever you need to do. She says, I want you to do as much research as you can about the Southeastern Mississippian culture before we ever make our first coil. It was the best advice she ever gave me. I went crazy from October to March. That's all I did. I was obsessed with it. But we started, and we had probably like a 3-month apprenticeship where I went on the weekends.
Every weekend.
And we did everything from scratch. It was an incredible experience.
Take us through that a bit. You would go out and would you dig your clay each time?
Because I would go on a Saturday. I'd go about 10 o'clock, get there about 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. And we went through each step. One of the steps, of course, is processing the clay. Well, Anna had a really great sense of humor. She had a huge sandstone slab in her backyard and had a big dish in it. She handed me this, like, it felt like a 5-pound rock, a little round rock. And she says, now, here's the clay. I've already have some glug for you. It's all hard and it looks like rock. She says, and she wanted me to grind and grind and grind. And now, you know, it's still pretty warm, like in the end of March. And I did this for a couple hours and the sweat's like pouring off of me. My back's hurting, my arm's hurting. And she says, well, I just want you to know how our ancestors did it and how they felt whenever they were doing all this work. She says, but, you know, there is a better way to do this. And then she showed me how you could actually just like put the dry clay in a bucket, let it soak, and then, you know, like put it through a strainer and let the water go off of it. But she was great.
She wanted you to have that experience.
She did. And I'm sure she was laughing at her, you know, laughing behind me all the while just to see how long I'd stick it out.
And, you know, she commented many times that it was all about the culture, too. What,
absolutely.
Learning the culture. What things did you learn that you maybe hadn't been as aware of?
One of the things that really Anna impressed on me was, you know, she had me do the research and she had me, she had a great library herself because that was one of the things she was a real stickler on. She says, you know, study the shapes, you know, I'm teaching you the basics, you know, how to gather the clay, how to clean it, how to do the coil building. And she always said, you know, the technique is not that hard to learn. You know, she says, perfecting it, you know, might take you a little while to practice. You know, she says, but anything that you work hard at, then, you know, it's going to pay off at some point. And she says, but what I want to impress on you, she says, stay within our culture. She says, I do not want to see you putting coca pellets on your pottery. She says, that's not us. And so I understood what she was saying, you know, because a lot of times when I'm making my own pottery and I'll look at designs and things, and some people have even said, well, isn't that kind of like copying? And I go, no, I don't think so, because what I learned from Anna was to look at the shapes, the designs, the techniques, but put your own identity onto it. And so that's one thing that I've really tried to do. I love the effigy pieces, but you can make 10 turtles effigies, but none of them are going to be the same, because they might start out as a turtle, but they might wind up as a fish. You know? So sometimes the clay does have a mind of its own.
So what were some of your early pots like?
They were cattywampus. That would probably be a really good word. I worked with Anna, you know, for the 3 months, and I'd bring clay home. We processed a huge, huge tub of clay, and it's actually some clay that that her husband, Bob, had cleaned. What he would do is clean the clay for her, and she would grind it up, and she had it in containers out in her workshop. And that was some of the first clay that I used to make my first pieces of pottery with. And then we had some that she had found either on her place or a place near Vanita. But it was a huge tub. It was enough clay to keep me in business all summer. But after I worked and made all these pieces all summer, I go, Anna, I've got like 15 pieces of pottery here, and I don't have that many relatives that even want my pottery. And so what am I going to do with all this stuff? She says, well, I just got an invitation from the Bartlesville Indian Summer Festival. And she says, you know, I'll just give you the application, and you have to send in some photos. And I go, Anna, they are not going to want my stuff at all. She says, oh, yeah, I'll just send out the stuff. And so I mailed it to him, and I, like, waited and waited, because I did not think that they want my pottery. And I think it was, like, the booth fee was, like, $250. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. So I finally got my letter. They sent me my acceptance, and we went to, actually Anna and her daughter Victoria went with me to the reception, and I'd entered a little turtle effigy that we had worked on, she and I had fired, and I had actually brought it home and blackened it in my oak leaves and horse manure mixture, and it won like the first place in a traditional category, which was like $300. So I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. And I'm like, I have all these pieces, you know, and I like sold out. So, but Anna was there when I won my ribbon, and she encouraged me from the very beginning. And if I ever had a question, I'd pick up the phone and call her, and she was just always there for me. And so it's kind of hard, because we still all miss her so much.
Mm-hmm. Did she help you price your first pots?
My very first piece that I sold was to one of her collectors. Her name was Florian Griggs. She and her husband were a big supporter of that Bartlesville Indian Summer Festival. And I think I said, you know, maybe I can sell this for like $25. And Anna looked at me, and she looked at Florian. She says, no, I don't think so. She says, $100. And my eyes got kind of big, you know, like, who? You know, I know what I did, what it took to get here, but because I hadn't really been around art or the art market or really knew that much about it, that was my first Native American art show, the one that I was in. Mm-hmm. So, she just really set my standards very high. You know, one of her comments that I remember her making is her neighbor wanted Anna to make a candy dish. And she just told that lady very politely, she says, that's not what I'm about. And she never was. She kept her art so true and so traditional that she really has set the standard for anybody that does traditional pottery making. And I'm glad she set it high, and I intend to stay right there where she wants me to be.
So were your pots from the beginning sort of like decorative stoneware? They're not, weren't necessarily meant to be used, but they were the...
That is correct. I mean, because we're trying to preserve this traditional pottery making, and it's actually just earthenware, you know, because it's just earth clay that we dig out of the ground and hand process ourselves. And while our ancestors did use it for functional use, and it probably could be used for functional, because we do want to keep it elevated to the point where it is a fine art. And so I try to stay with Anna's lesson in trying to make it more of an art form. And some of it is, you know, could be functional, but for the most part, I would say it's something that we want to be have as collectible, something that could be in someone's home that that they're proud of, you know, and they know the history of it, and they know why we make this, and it's always an honor when someone purchases a piece of my pottery for their home, or for a collection, or for a museum. It's a great honor.
So did you then have the... were you bitten by the bug? Were you ready to do more shows immediately?
Yeah, that first show in the fall of 1999, and then, you know, people come to those shows that promote other art shows, and so that kind of led to a few shows the next year. And then I think, because Anna was still doing the Santa Fe Indian Art Market, I went out there with Anna and Victoria when they did the market. Not in 2000. I didn't go with him. And in 2001, I did go with him just to see what the art market. And then that really opened up my eyes to what Native American art collectors really are about. Because if we ever get to the point in Oklahoma with our art shows to the standard that Santa Fe has with the buyers and the collectors that understand about the artwork, then we will have actually done what Anna worked so many years to get to. And while I know we have people that appreciate the artwork, I don't think we have the level of understanding that they do out there. But they've been doing it for how many years now? I don't know. I can't remember what.
Yeah.
75, 80 years, and maybe longer. I can't remember, but we're getting there. Like the Cherokee Art Market, the Chickasaws, the Choctaws, the Creeks. You know, they're all doing their part to get us to that point.
Did you notice a different reception for, Five Tribes pottery at Santa Fe Indian Market from?
I think. Although we all, you know, the Pueblos and the Navajos, the traditional potters, you know, they do the same thing that we do. They go out and hand dig their clay and process it. But because our pottery is different than what people understand, people recognize Southwest pottery in an instant. Anybody, no matter if you're a pottery collector or not. But ours is not quite as recognizable just because the designs and shapes are a little bit different. So my own personal experience is that it's been well received. And I've done that market now for 10 years, and every year has been I would say, fairly successful for someone like me who I'm not a full-time artist. So it's a great opportunity for me to go out there and show my Southeastern Mississippian style of pottery, and the collectors are getting more familiar with it. And I know Jane Osti goes out there, and Bill Glass, and we have some new Cato potter going out there. So there is a lot more exposure to our style of pottery. So it's going to be highly collectible as well.
When did you start meeting like other potters besides Anna?
That first spring and summer, I met Victoria Mitchell, Anna's daughter, and we worked quite a bit together and did a few shows together the first few years. And then I met Jane, Jane Austey, and Jane's pottery is incredible. You know, I've always aspired to become half as good as Jane is. If I ever get to that point, I will actually feel like I've succeeded. So, you know, and by doing the art shows, you do meet so many incredible artists. And for me, doing the art shows is like, I know whenever I see the art there that I need to step up my own game a little bit. Not a little bit, but a whole lot, because we have incredible Oklahoma artists. It's wonderful.
What's the best piece of business advice you got from another artist? Maybe not necessarily even a potter.
I think one of the hardest things for me is pricing my own artwork, because I might have something that I've worked hours and hours and hours on for or with, and it's not like really what I wanted it to be. And pricing, and so I had an artist friend tell me, another potter, he was non-native. He says, well, what you do is you have your pottery here, and then you have a $20 bill. Start with that. Well, do you want this $20 bill or do you want the pot? Maybe you want two $20 bills, you want the pot. You know, and so you graduate to the point, do you want to keep it or do you want the money? And so that was kind of a funny way to go about it. But it is hard. It's hard to say, what is this worth to someone else, or what is it worth to yourself? So it is kind of a difficult thing. And you could always, like, how many hours did you put in it? You know, that doesn't really work for me, but maybe it does for some artist. It's just, it's hard to know, you know, what is going to sell and what isn't going to sell. Just have to make what you like and do the best you can.
So what was another important award for you?
The very first year that I got accepted into the Santa Fe Indian Art Market, I actually got on the waiting list, and my number was 3. And so they said, you know, your chances of getting into the market are great, so just go ahead, keep making your pottery, just like, you know, you were going to come out here. And in fact, you can come out because someone's going to sell out, and then you can move into their booth. But if you do, you know, come out as an artist on the waiting list, you can't get in the artist competition. So it's like, well, you know, yeah, I'm going to go. I'll do that because I've got some nice pieces and I've been working all summer. But 3 weeks before the market, they said, oh, you're in. So they gave me a tiny little booth behind F&M Bank, and I was just so excited to be there. And I entered an effigy bowl. It had the head with an oblong bowl with a mace handle. And I entered it into one of the categories, and it won a best of division, where they have like the A, B, C, D, F, G. Mm-hmm. So it won like G.
Wonderful.
And it was like, oh my gosh, you know. Victoria was with me, and Anna was there, and we didn't sleep all night long. And we had to be there at like 5 o'clock in the morning to set up. But it was an incredible experience. It's just knowing that the judging recognized that art form, the Mississippian, Southeastern, traditional pottery. It was amazing. That was probably the best show I can remember being out there. And I have won other ribbons out there, but that was definitely, I don't think I'll ever win a best of class, but you never know. I'm still working toward that.
Well, and can you describe, because there's sort of a phenomenon, if you win a prize out there.
Oh, there's definitely a phenomenon that goes with
what
it.
What happens?
Well, on preview night, you know, it's on Friday night, people have to pay, you know, their $50 if they go to the general preview just to go in and look at the pottery, and you can't sell anything. And so when you win a ribbon, though, it does carry a little weight with it because the collectors are there and they're writing their names down and seeing where you are. And so that Saturday morning of the first year I went out there, you know, I had several people before I even had the pot on my table, like, okay, I want that pot, you know, that has the ribbons with it. And so it is. They're usually waiting for you before you ever even get it on your table. So it's pretty nice. We don't do that here yet, but we're going to.
So did you take any other workshops after working with Anna?
You know, I've taken a workshop from Bill Glass, and we did more sculptural pottery, just so you could kind of learn a little different technique. And actually, he taught us a really nice technique that he said he learned from Alan Hauser when he was out at IAIA. But mostly, I've just taught workshops. I haven't really taken a lot from other people.
But you did learn how to do gas kiln firing.
Yeah, basically I taught that to myself. Yeah, it's not that hard.
So it's kind of a two-person business, the art business. Has your husband been able to play?
My big supporter in my family is my daughter, Jackie. From the very beginning, in fact, she can make coil pottery as well, but she got bit by the bug by Martha Berry with the beadwork. And so she's made several bandolier bags and really didn't do it for a long time because her son was still young and very needy. Now he's 17 and going into the Army, so she's getting back into her beadwork, and we're starting our historical doll project, so we're kind of looking forward to that.
Can you explain a little more about that?
I've wanted to make dolls for about 5 or 6 years, and so my idea was that I would do the head or this from the neck up, and then we would do like cloth dolls for the body. But to make it a historical project where each doll can represent like a time period, and then do the research and make sure the clothing, the attire is proper to that time period that we're writing about. She is a great writer, so she does all the write-up for each doll. And I think it, because dolls are so a significant part of every culture, not just Native American culture, but every culture has had, you know, some type of doll. So to me, this is kind of our contribution to keep our history alive and be able to document it as we go along with our own stories and our own research with each doll. So we've made one. It's a beginning.
Look forward to seeing more. So talk a little bit about giving a workshop. What was that? What was the first workshop that you gave?
The first workshops that I did with Victoria Mitchell and the Creek Council House, and invited us to come down there and present workshops. And basically, you know, it's just teaching the processes and solving some of the mystery, like how do you get the clay? Are you sure, you know, will this make good pottery? And like Anna said and has told me that, you know, the technique of coil building is pretty simple. You know, it just takes some practice to get it to where you want it to be. And for most artists, we never get there. I think that's what keeps us going. And then the firing, you know, that's a real mystery. And so I always tell, you know, kids or adults, you know, it's just basically simple chemistry. You know, you have clay, it has to harden, it has to dry, all the water has to be out of it. And you have to do like a slow firing process so it can go from clay to ceramic. And you can do that with wood.
How do you think giving workshops has impacted your own work?
A lot of times I really, not a lot of times, most of the times I enjoy teaching the workshops more than I do the art shows themselves. The art shows can be rewarding because, you know, people appreciate your work and they pat you on the back and they say, oh, did you make that? You know, oh, that's great, you know. But teaching is kind of what, I guess, Anna's legacy is what I was going to say. Because that was what she did. She wanted her legacy, what she learned, what she was self-taught, to me, to Victoria, to, you know, Jane, so many people that she influenced with her own high level of expectations for what it should be. And so that's what we want to do. We want to pass it on to the next generations. Now I have three granddaughters. So we may even have, you know, a generation thing going here pretty soon.
I wanted to ask you about giving workshops in Georgia. And I don't know if that was your first time going to some of the homelands or...
Last year, let's see, this is 2012. So in 2011, I think it was April of 2011, the Cherokee, I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the project, but they had like a, basically it was an artist in residency program where you go to, we went to Northwest Georgia, actually my aunt went with me to Dalton, Georgia, I think. Northwest Georgia, there was not a single Cherokee child to be found. But, I mean, the concept was you went there, you went to, actually we went from grade school all the way up through high school and we did several workshops each day. But we did the mini presentations so that they would actually have exposure to the people that had lived in those lands before them, you know, that were actually no longer there but had... hopefully have had an impact on what was there before them so that they could kind of have some knowledge of that. So that was a great experience. And the kids and the faculty members, we were well received. They provided us with a place to stay. And I wish I could remember the name of the group that really sponsored that. I know part of it was through Cherokee Nation, but there was like a sponsorship program.
I wanted to ask you if you had a chance to do any research, Mississippian research, maybe while you were in Georgia at any of those museums or?
Because I had such a hectic schedule and I was only there for a week and like one day was driving. You know, so seems like we got there on a Sunday, and we started right off on Monday, and we do like three schools a day. Wow. So it was pretty busy, and so they actually provided us with a place to stay just right outside of Dalton. So there was no the little cabin that we stayed in was a family place. It had been in their family for years and years. And there was no TV, no radio, so it was really just a nice, quiet time, and went to bed, got up, and started in the next morning. So.
But you have gone to North Carolina, you've been to shown at Quala before?
I haven't actually shown or done any workshops or had... done any of their art shows out there, but when I first started in with my pottery, I did feel compelled that I needed to go visit the ancestral homelands. And so my daughter and my grandson, who was only 5 at the time, we drove out. I took a vacation. And so our first stop was in Helen, Georgia, where some of Anna's friends were. They had that Tecovitha art gallery. And we did a little workshop there with that little gallery, and spent the night with the Lammers, who own the gallery. And then we went on to Georgia the next day and stayed with some of Anna's friends, Betty Dupree, who actually had run the Koala. Is it a
museum?
Yeah, well, no, it's actually a co-op, the Koala Co-op, where, so she was very cordial to us. She showed us around town. We went to the gallery, and we went to the museum, which was really incredible, and went to the plays out there. So it was a vacation, but it was pretty moving because, you know, the Cherokee people you saw there looked like my cousins. So it was moving in a way that's kind of hard to explain, just because if I'd been in a different family or things had happened differently, I mean, I could have been there instead of here. So it like I said, it's hard to explain, but it was a great trip, and I hope to get to go out there and visit again. So it's like kind of going home.
Did you have any ideas that kind of surfaced in your work after that?
What I really felt after being in Cherokee, and this is nothing, I don't want to sound ungrateful about the artwork there or unappreciative, but I was so glad that I had Anna, because if they had had her there, you know, it might have, and they do have some quality artists, Joel Queen, and there are a lot of some of the older potters there, but our pottery, and maybe I'm just prejudiced, but is a little bit different there than theirs. Now Joel Queen, he's more contemporary, but as far as like traditional, the effigies and the bowls and things that are, I don't know, it is a little bit different. You can just tell, but it's, they're from their area and we're from here, and we're not the same, but we do study the same shapes and the stamp pottery and that kind of thing. But like I said, Anna set the standard pretty high for us.
Have you benefited a little bit from, you know, that they finally got that legislation passed to earmark a certain percentage of the tribes?
Anytime they
build,
yeah.
New buildings for
when they
art.
When they first built the casino out, I guess when they opened up the hotel, I did get like one piece of pottery
at
Catoosa. Yeah, but I think it's one of those things where you have to apply or you have to send. And because I work full time, I really just never pursued that. I don't really have anything in the gift shops. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe one of these days, but right now I don't.
So how do you manage that, working full-time and you just know how many shows you can actually do? How do you balance that?
Like this year, I've only done 2 art shows, but then because the 5 Civilized Tribes and the Cherokee Heritage Museum, you know, they have the Trail of Tears, and then they have the Homecoming Show, and then 5 Civilized Tribes has Art Under the Oaks. And so at least I do have an opportunity to show my work in those. And it's an art competitive show, so it's, you can still get a little bit of work out there and get your recognition, and so people still see your work, even though there's not a whole lot of it right now.
How typically, how many pieces do you try to do on a weekend? Or,
you know, like when I went to Santa Fe, I took about 15 pieces. And so I was just more selective, you know, with what I made for that, because, you know, I came home with 3 pieces. So
working specifically for that show.
Yeah. So, and because that is my big art market, And so, like the Cherokee Art Market, while it's a great show and they have lots of ribbon money, $75,000, it's not a good selling market yet. Mm-hmm. But I still want to continue to support it because that's the only way that we're going to get to the level where we need to be, where the buyers come in and recognize the quality artwork and people can actually profit from participating in that art show. Hopefully one day we'll be there.
Do you? Are commissions a very big part of your work?
I might do only half a dozen commissions a year. It's not like I have a website or I try to advertise it. It's just, you know, if somebody refers me or like I'll come back from Santa Fe with maybe 3 or 4 commissions. So that's fine. That's really all I have time to do for. Commissions to me are harder to do than just like, oh, I saw a piece of driftwood, you know, and now I know I'm going to make a fish effigy to go on it and I'm going to mount it. And so it's not as inspiring for someone to say, okay, well, I want this kind of pot, you know. It's much more rewarding, I guess, to make what's in your mind or in your heart.
So how do you think, we're going to talk just a little bit about your philosophy and techniques now, but how do you think the colors of your work, pottery, and the forms have maybe changed over the years?
I think for myself, mine hasn't really changed a lot from when I started like 13 years ago with Anna. It's just because that's what I enjoy doing. Every artist wants to grow in their art. And so last year I did a contemporary form out of some commercial earthenware clay. I did a nice big carved pot. I put a big price on it and won a big ribbon. And it still wasn't as rewarding to me as doing my little turtle effigies. You know, I wanted to know that I could do that, mm-hmm. but that's not really my style. So, and I may do a few more pieces like that, but I like my little pieces.
And you still, majority of your work is still wood-fired as opposed to...
Yeah. Except for this summer. And some summers, almost every summer now for the past few years because of the droughts, we've had the burn ban going. But this summer was so incredible dry, I couldn't cheat at all. And it did hurt me at Santa Fe this year because I couldn't enter into a traditional category. And that's where I feel like my strengths are and what I enjoy and what I want to promote for myself. So I had to enter all in contemporary, even though it was in like my native clay, hand form, you know, everything but wood firing. So hopefully we're going to get some more rain soon.
Now you do a lot of incising of designs. Do you draw those, do you sketch those out?
Sometimes I'll have a little book or something and lay out kind of the designs that I want. But one of the things that Anna taught me is that, okay, you build your pot and you kind of think of what you want. But because I'm not a perfectionist, she said, don't worry if part of the design isn't quite going to fit, like you're going to duplicate. She says, you make the design fit the pot. And so that's what I do. It mm-hmm. kind of falls into place somehow, even though it might be a little bigger over here, a little bit smaller over here, because I don't have templates. You know, I might have like a small template or something, but I don't, it's not a science, it's not a perfect science to putting the design on the pot. It's just what she said, make the design fit the pot. So that's what I do.
How important is burnishing for you, the burnishing part of the process?
You know, a lot of the older pieces, and I've gone to Gilcrease and got to go into their archives and study and research and photograph the not very many woodland pieces, but a lot of the southeastern, what they call the Mississippian time period pieces. They weren't highly burnished, but I know a lot of the artists now are doing the real high glossy burnishing, and I like that too, but mine mostly are a little more matte. They're not that real glassy shiny, because that's not my style.
How about your signature? How did you
well,
develop that?
Well, because my dad was somewhat of a doodle artist, I guess, and actually he had been a silversmith in his younger years before he met and married my mom, and then of course he raised his kids, and about 5 years or 6 years before he died, he got started back into making his jewelry again, and he signed his jewelry Run Free. I don't know where that came from. But I was a daddy's girl, and so when I started making my pottery, that was the first thing that went on my pottery, just because of my dad. So it's Run Free.
What is your creative process from the time you get an idea?
I usually have to think on it a while, you know. I'll get an idea, and sometimes I'll even write it down, because I might forget about it if I don't. Or I'll put it in my notes on my iPhone or something and kind of mull it over for a little while, and then I'll start on it. And then usually it'll come together pretty good. So, not always, but sometimes.
Will you see a piece all the way through, or will you be working on several pieces simultaneously?
With pottery, especially if you're getting ready for a show, it's really better to work on two or three pieces at one time, because you're going to have one piece that's kind of still kind of wet, so you can start at another piece while this one's kind of setting up a little bit, and maybe kind of get another one started and keep it covered up. So it is good, especially if you're working toward a show, to get two or three pieces going at one time. Because with clay, you know, if you keep it covered up pretty good, you can kind of let it process to the point where that you can do the work that you want to, but it dries a little bit more.
Do you have a place around here where you dig your clay, or?
I do not have a great source for clay. I'm the person that I were driving down the road and they're working on a road bed or something, like, oh my gosh, there's clay over there. And just because I don't have a good source for clay. I do have a pile of clay down in the pasture. My daughter had friends that worked for Francoma Pottery, which is just right down the road from us, before they closed, and they hauled clay for them from what they call Sugarloaf Hill in Sepulpa. And so I once mentioned to her friends, I said, well, I sure would like to have some of that clay. Well, they said, well, I'll bring you some. So they did. They brought me a dump truck load full of clay. So it's down in the pasture. Stuff grows out of it. So I can go down and get some of that. It's a little soft, but it makes really pretty pottery. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't burnish great, but if you make a nice little slip out of it, you can get a little more shine.
And how important are slips with your work?
I usually put a slip, at least a little fine slip, maybe of the same clay body on everything, just because to me it makes a little smoother pot. To me, the slip is just the fine particles of clay. And because you are hand forming, you know, you have some little incongruities, you know, in your piece. And so it just kind of fills that in, and then when you burnish it, it even fills it in a little bit more. So I like to use the slips. I think they're good.
What is your creative routine?
Only through the work week. Saturdays and Sundays are for family and grandkids. So usually come home, fix dinner, do a little laundry, clean up the kitchen, and then I go out to my workshop. Me and my dogs, my husband watches the ball games on TV, and that way I have my quiet and can sometimes work too late.
But at least a couple hours.
Yeah.
So what was maybe a fork in the road moment for you when you could have gone one direction with the pottery or and you went in another? Or,
you know, my road with my pottery has been pretty straight. Just, again, just because of Anna Mitchell, you know. She taught me the way I wanted to go, and I believed in her, and I had faith and confidence in her, and it was so much about the culture and the processes. It's been pretty much the same from the very beginning.
What's been one of the high points of your career? Might have been one that you mentioned, but...
You know, I've done the Santa Fe Indian Art Market, and I've, you know, had success there, and I've been to the Herd Show and the Idle Jaw Show, and, you know, our shows here, the Red Earth, and as I don't do as much of those anymore because the job I have right now is a great job, but it's very demanding, and so I'm just not doing as many shows now. But honestly, anytime anyone asks me anything about my pottery, it's just because I say I met this wonderful lady, you know, and I was already, you know, an adult, my kids were raised, and she really just influenced the path I've taken for 13 years now. And I know she's gone, but she's always with us.
What's been one of the low points?
Losing Anna. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
And you've talked about the dolls that you're going to collaborate on with your daughter. Is there another project coming up that you're super excited about or a technique that you've...
You know, because I have the three granddaughters now and they're young, you know, they're just 1, 2, and 4, I really want to take them to the art shows, you know, give them the exposure that I didn't get, not cram it down their throat, you know, no one wants that for their kids or grandkids, but to let them kind of show them the path, you know, and if that's what they choose, then I want to teach them what I know and see what happens from there.
And we'll get to see the piece that you've capped that your granddaughters have dibs on probably now. is there anything that we've forgotten to cover that you'd like to add?
I don't think so. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to share my story and hope that it'll influence someone else, you know, maybe to follow the traditional pottery path. There's not a whole lot of us, and I mentioned that I do the Creek Cultural Day, and we have hundreds of kids come, and it's really great exposure for them because I have taken the native clay, let them see what it takes, you know, they grind it and sift it, and then we rehydrate it and wedge it all together, and then I let them make the pieces out of it. And I tell those kids, I said, you know, one of these days, one of you might be a potter or an artist or something. But if you choose this traditional pottery path and you don't like hard work, you won't like this. And so it is about hard work, but it's very rewarding when you know you can go out and dig your own clay, do everything from the very beginning, use what Mother Nature provided for you, and come out with something that can be quite extraordinary sometimes. Not all of them are gonna be like that, but sometimes you get that piece and you go, oh my gosh, you know, that's what I should have done, you know? So it can be very rewarding.
Well, great, we're gonna take a look at your work then. Okay, would you like to tell us about this piece?
This is what I would call a tripod water bottle. The inspiration for this is my three granddaughters. They're ages 4, 2, and 1, but to go along with the three sisters, corn, beans, and squash. And so when I started on this, it was going to be a traditional entry for Santa Fe, but I did not get to wood fire it. So I don't even think I entered it out there this year. Mm-hmm. But we have the corn for my little green-eyed Cameron, who's a 4-year-old, And then we have the Beans, and she's a little 1-year-old, and that kind of fits her personality as well. And then we have the Squash, which is the middle granddaughter that's 2. And I kind of looked at their faces. They kind of all have this little button nose, you know. So it is a piece that I'm sure I'll keep for the girls.
That's very nice.
But it is a traditional style.
Right.
Just like Anna said, with my own identity put onto it. So.
Right.
This piece was inspired from a Moundville stone bowl. Mm-hmm. It does have this kind of a mythological serpent head mm-hmm. on it. So okay. that the head is pretty much like what I saw in the photograph and the boat shape and the deck. But what I did a little bit more is do some kind of light carving, but with the Mississippian designs, the hand and the eye and the spirals kind of repeated on each side. So now in hindsight, if I did this again, I'd probably make it a little bit taller, but you know, it's too late now. But the head's hollow, and it actually has some little beads in it, which is kind of typical of some of those Southeastern, more ceremonial type piece, is what I would call this.
It's just beautiful. You can see the, you know, the fact that the burnish is more subtle. You can see how
and this one
that
is
works.
Only wood fired, because I've done this one since I got back from Santa Fe. They actually lifted the burn ban in Creek County.
All right, and this piece?
This piece, you know, because I've done so many of the animal effigies, I've done a lot of turtles and fish, and those seem to be my best ones, frogs. but actually, I was in a flea market or a junk store, and I found an old doily, a grandmother's doily, and I immediately said, that's my next turtle, because it's the top part is just flat, you know, just rolled out flat with the doily rolled on top of it. To me, it like made the perfect turtle top, and then the rest of it is just coiled. And I did elaborate with, which I don't normally do, with a little bit of
copper
foil. Mm-hmm. So, but it's just a turtle effigy model.
Right. So, I love the little face.
And I actually got to wood fire this one too. I made these for the Cherokee Art Market.
Uh huh. Well, thank you very much for your time tonight.